Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 23, chapters entitled Lord Krishna Fights with Vanasura. And today we're covering texts 7 through 21. None of them have purports. I think what we can do is maybe chant the first verse responsively, and then I'll just read the translations. Anyways, after class will be gone. Okay. Asitsu tumalam yodam. Abhutam romaharshanam. Krishna Shankaro, Shankaro. I'm sorry, I messed up. Krishna Shankarayo Rajan. Rayumna Guhayor Api. Asit Sutumalam Yudam. Abhutam Romaharshanam. Krishna Shankarayo Rajan. Rayumna Guhayor Api. Please chant. Asitsu tumalam yudam. Vaishnavis? Krishna Shankarayo Rajan. There occurred Sutumalam, very tumultuous, Yudam, a fight, Adbhutam, astonishing, Romaharshanam, causing bodily hair to stand on end. Krishna Sankaro, I'm sorry. Krishna Sankarayo. Between Lord Krishna and Lord Shiva. Rajan. O King. Viriksha. Pradyumna Guhayo. Between Pradyumna and Kartikeya. Api. Also. Translation. A most astonishing, tumultuous, and hair-raising battle then commenced. with Lord Krishna matched against Lord Shankar and Pradyumna against Kartikeya. I'm going to keep reading the translations now. Lord Balaram fought with Kumbhanda and Kupakarna, Samba with Bana's son, and Satyaki with Bana. Brahma and the other ruling demigods, along with Siddhas, Charanas, and great sages, as well as Gandharvas, Apsaras, and Yakshas, all came in their celestial airplanes to watch. With sharp pointed arrows discharged from his bow, Changa, Lord Krishna drove away the various followers of Lord Shiva, Bhutas, Pramatas, Guyakas, Dakinis, Yatudanas, Detalas, Dinayakas, Pretas, Matas, Pisachas, Kushamandas, and Brahma Rakshasas. What's that? Lord Shiva, wielder of the trident, shot various weapons at Lord Krishna, wielder of Shanga. But Lord Krishna was not in the least perplexed. He neutralized all these weapons with appropriate counterweapons. Lord Krishna counteracted a Brahmastra with another Brahmastra, a wind weapon with a mountain weapon, a fire weapon with a rain weapon, and Lord Shiva's personal Pashupatastra weapon with his own personal weapon, the Narayan Astra. After bewildering Lord Shiva by making him yawn with a yawning weapon, Lord Krishna proceeded to strike down Banasura's army with a sword, club, and arrows. Lord Kartikeya was distressed by the flood of Pradyumna's arrows raining down from all sides, and thus he fled the battlefield on his peacock as blood poured from his limbs. Kumbhanda and Kupakarna, tormented by Lord Balaram's club, fell down dead. When the soldiers of these two demons saw that their leaders had been killed, they scattered in all directions. Banasura was furious to see his entire military force being torn apart. Leaving his fight with Satyaki, he charged across the battlefield on his chariot and attacked Lord Krishna. Excited to a frenzy by the fighting, Bana simultaneously pulled taut all the strings of his 500 bows and fixed two arrows on each string. Lord Srihari split every one of Banasura's bows simultaneously and also struck down his chariot driver, chariot, and horses. The Lord then sounded his conch shell. Just then, Banasura's mother, Kotara, desiring to save her son's life, appeared before Lord Krishna naked and with her hair undone. Lord Gadagraja turned his face away to avoid seeing the naked woman, and Banasura, deprived of his chariot, his horse, his bow shattered, took the opportunity to flee into his city. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gananjana Shalakya Chakshur Umritam Kena Taishmai Shri Gurave Namaha. In the mid-80s, I was in Vrindavan, and Brahmananda Prabhu was giving Bhagavatam class, and he made a point that I hadn't heard before. Maybe some of you are familiar with this. But he said, the Prabhupada said that there's one verse in the Bhagavad Gita that is the most important verse. And I'm wondering if any of you have an idea of what that may be. I never actually saw it in writing on folio. I just relying upon Brahmananda's Prabhu's recollection. Of course, he had, in the very early days, probably the most association of anybody with Srila Prabhupada. You know, he was the first TP at 26 Second Avenue. Anybody know? Huh? You can hand them the mic. Give them the mic. It's important to give you the mic because I can't really hear without it.
I was thinking wherever there is Krishna and Arjuna, there is victory, morality.
That's a good guess, but that's not the answer. That's not what Brahmananda said. Okay, so Divyanga Sain Sarvadharma Prikjagja, right? That's the usual guess. Anybody else? Okay, you want to hand her the mic? I think I heard it.
I said, man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru.
Yeah. So, another super good guess. It wasn't what Brahmananda said that Prabhupada said. Anybody else? Everybody give up? Say uncle. All right. So it's actually connected with the 10th canto. Anybody else want to guess after that hint? Has to do with our ticket to the spiritual world, the doorway to the spiritual world, how we get through it. Okay, nobody? Okay, janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tat tataha chaptvaya deham punar janma janma naiti mam iti sojana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving this body, take birth again in this material world, but he comes to my supreme abode. So, I guess the next question that would be logical is, why is that so important? Why would that verse be cited by Srila Prabhupada as the most important one in the Bhagavad Gita? Anybody? The Dhammohan will definitely have an answer for that.
Well, for me, it always pointed out that we know that Krishna comes by his internal potency to give pleasure to his devotees. So I like the bhakti vatsal aspect of Krishna that I could see in that book.
All right. I guess the thing is that, you know, what's stressed in Gita 4:9 is one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not by leaving his body. So it's a question of knowing. Now, this isn't mere book knowledge, right? I mean, this, the Dhammohan was chastising me this morning for orienting in that way. No, it's a different, completely different understanding. This is realized knowledge. That's what is spoken of here, I'm quite sure. Otherwise, it's not a small thing to go back to the spiritual world. So, how to get that? How to get that? And what does the 10th canto have to do with this? Of course, we have the appearance of Lord Krishna and all of these different pastimes. But to understand the nature of them, well, I guess that's the task ahead of us. You know, if we're to go back to the spiritual world, we have to understand this. It's actually quite unique. This is the only temple, I've been in many temples throughout the world, is the only temple I've ever been in where they're covering this section of the Bhagavatam. Usually everyone stops at chapter 13 to the 10th canto and goes back to the beginning. So it's a very, you know, it's a real, everyone's in the stretch zone when they give class here because it's so high. But that stretch zone is helpful because it helps us to enter in to this more and more of an understanding of the transcendental nature of Krishna's pastimes. Now, I'm not going to answer all of the questions right away, and I don't know if I'll answer many of them by the end of the class either, but there's, you know, in kind of prefacing this purportless section that I've been given, there's the previous purport makes an interesting point. Sridhar Swami, he states that the word Bhagavan is used here to indicate that Lord Shiva is by nature all-knowing and thus well aware of Lord Krishna's greatness. Still, although Shiva knew Lord Krishna would defeat him, he joined the battle against him to demonstrate the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, I mean, Shiva Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, you know, he's the greatest Vaishnava. And also, His relationship is in Dasya Ras. He's one of those servants that's been appointed with a big responsibility by the Lord, you know, to destroy the material world at a time of dissolution. Right? So he's got a big agenda. Other things, you know, I mean, he's involved with so many things in the material universe, but that's his big job. Doesn't really make so much sense. Why would he fight with the Lord? Okay, so now, and then as we go into Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, and he gives two reasons why Lord Shiva entered the battle against Krishna. The first, to increase Lord Krishna's pleasure and enthusiasm. So if Lord Shiva is all-knowing, then he must have known that he was going to lose even before he started fighting, which would make it really difficult for him to put, you know, a lot of utsaha into the battle, right? So we can understand that something happened to Lord Shiva's knowledge, his understanding, his realization. What happened? You know, how was he seemingly so out of it, you know, I mean, the lights weren't on, in one sense, you know, I mean, we could say it using American vernacular. So I guess we all know that he was covered over by Yoga Maya. Why? Just like in the end of the last chapter, interesting point, this is just after after Aniruddha was captured by Bana. But did he use the snake weapon, the Pashupati, was it? And then the Acharyas explained, this is the last purport in the last chapter, the Acharyas explained that Banasura could not actually capture the powerful grandson of Lord Krishna. However, the Lord's Leela Shakti, or pastime potency, allowed this to happen so that the events described in the next chapter could take place. So, you know, the same Leela Shakti is working over Lord Shiva here. You know, he's, you know, doing something that normally, you know, with all in reverence, you know, like I'm expecting my sons to deal with me in all in reverence. Now, as teenagers, usually that's not the case. But they should anyway, you know, they should understand what a great person I am, but they don't. They don't quite get it, you know. So somehow they're covered over. Maybe in this case it would be Mahamaya. But with Lord Shiva, it is Yoga Maya. But it's for a purpose. It's for a purpose, you know. One, to glorify Krishna. You know, this battle is to glorify Krishna. And we see the grand finale in this chapter, you know, where the Shiva Dwara and then Lord Shiva himself, they end up glorifying Krishna after getting smashed. So there's a purpose behind this. So this will become a little clearer as we go ahead. Now, interestingly enough, in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this previous purport which we're citing, he cites, okay, so now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur further states in this regard that yoga maya, are we still on up there? Maybe it would help keep it switched on. Yeah, why not? We're on a 6 purport, text 6, yeah. 1063.6. Okay, so now, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura further states in this regard that Yoga Maya, Lord Krishna's internal potency, bewildered Lord Shiva just as she had bewildered Brahma. In support of this statement, the Acharya cites the phrase Brahma Rudradi Mohanam from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Of course, Yoga Maya's job is to make fine arrangements for the Lord's pastime, and thus Shiva became enthusiastic to battle the Supreme Lord Krishna. Now, that the suffix adi, or that part of that compound word, Rudradi, means other, others. So there's others besides Brahma and Shiva that Rupa Goswami is referencing here. And one of that other that he specifically keys in on is Balaram. So also Balaram gets bewildered by Lord Krishna's potency. Now, does anybody remember some instance where Lord Brahma was bewildered by Yoga Maya? Wow. Just as he's walking by Divyanga, it's like a celestial voice coming down. You know, he said the Brahma Vimohan Leela. So it's a fact. That was what I was looking for. So it's pretty amazing because, you know, this whole pastime where Lord Brahma, he steals the calves and the cowherd boys and puts them in a cave. And apparently, I don't know, I didn't have so much time because it's kind of dawned on me to cite this late in the preparation ball game. But you know, Lord Krishna, he expanded himself as exact replicas of these cowherd boys and calves just so everybody in Braj wouldn't be disturbed at the missing cowherd boys and calves. And this yoga maya that enabled all the residents to see the calves and cowherd boys as the real McCoys just was all pervasive, including Lord Balaram. And then gradually there was a receding of this influence on Lord Balaram, and he started to recognize, well, something's a little unusual here because of the level of affection that the cowherd men and the cows demonstrated. And he also experienced it himself. And he's like, wow, what's going on here? And this is very unique. He was seeing it in others, and then he also experienced it himself. It's almost like this is a kind of affection that I experience with Lord Krishna. So then Yoga Maya, like he kind of peeled layer after layer off. I think there's 4 steps of Lord Balaram's full awakening. And then he realized, and then he approached Krishna and said, what's going on, you know, and said that these are your expansions. Now, I was listening to a lecture of Virajan Prabhu recently, and he was commenting on this pastime, and this wasn't, I was looking for it. My library is in Mayapur, so I'm at a little disadvantage, you know, I can get a lot of books on the folio, but I don't have hard copies, and some of the books aren't on folio, so then I'm really in a jam. So I was consulting this morning during Japa, and because one point that Burjan made was that Lord Balaram actually became upset. He became angry with Krishna for, one, allowing Lord Brahma to steal the calves and the cowherd boys. And, you know, that he went through this whole thing and didn't tell him, and, you know, he was upset with him. And as a matter of fact, he stopped going out and cowherding with Lord Krishna. He was so upset, and he didn't return to his that kind of role as a cowherd boy until Lord Brahma returned the cowherd boys and calves. Now, that wasn't in Shara Artha Darshini. Did I pronounce that right? It wasn't covered there. Madame Mohan advised that I could find it there. Apparently, it's one of the other acharyas that commented in this way. But what this kind of brings up is just the personalism. You know, Lord, why was Lord Balaram upset? He was upset because he really missed the association of his devotees. And of course, Krishna also, you know, I mean, Lord Balaram is an expansion of Krishna. So this brings up the point of the personalism in dealings. We should get ringtones that are the mooing of cows, and everything would be sattvic, and we would welcome it. I lost my the technology discombobbled my brain. What? Oh, the personalism, yeah. So this is one of the primary ingredients of the pastimes of the Lord, you know, is the personal affection that he exchanges with his devotees. And, you know, the loving care, and it's something that as we begin to perceive this more and more in the pastimes, we also probably can start to understand that he's also doing that with us. Sometimes it comes in the form of tough love. Like one of my favorite references is 1.9.19, the passing of Bhishma Dev. And there, in the purport, Prabhupada describes the different bhavs that Krishna has with his devotees. He starts out with a loving relationship with Yashoda Mayi, and then how Yashoda Mayi ties up Krishna in the Damodar Lila, and then the Sakya Ras with Arjuna, how he became Arjuna's chariot driver, and then he describes the relationship with Sukadeva Goswami and the four Kumaras, and then he says something extremely interesting. He says, and the tribulations a devotee undergoes is another transcendental bhav with the Lord. So there's, you know, this is one thing that we start to see, you know, in these pastimes, that these are, there's an abundance. It's just a continual flow of loving exchanges. So this is a very big part of the transcendental nature of the Lord, and it's personal. So with that kind of realization, we can also begin to see that in ourselves. And when, you know, the devotees in Krishna's pastimes are motivated with a desire to please the Lord, as Lord Shiva was in this pastime, you know, and because of that desire to please the Lord, then he was very readily influenced by Yoga Maya to take up an enthusiastic combatant mood with Krishna, even though it was kind of like out of sync with his normal dealings with Krishna, as in Dasya Ras and as Krishna's servant and an appointed agent of the Lord with very specific responsibilities. So there's that. But then there's another aspect that is applicable in our own lives. And that's that, you know, our business really is to please Krishna. When we examine, you know, we're off on this tangent, you know, by the mercy, not really a tangent, it's kind of like the essence. But Rupa Goswami has prompted this with this quote, you know, on the bewilderment of Brahma, Shiva, and also others, or Balaram. So Rupa Goswami has also made it really clear what our responsibilities are as devotees in a very important verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1.1.11, which Josh knows really well by now, the definition of Uttama Bhakti. You want to recite it for us?
Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma dinavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktirutama.
So what is the anukulyena? What does that mean? That's an important... wait a sec. Give us the translation.
When pure devotional service arises, one must be free from all material desires, from knowledge gained from monistic philosophy, and from fruitive action. One must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires.
Right. Good. A plus. So what is anukulyena? What does that mean? Anybody? Well, anukulyena krishnanu, in that reference it does, but in this one I'm not sure. That's not what usually we hear. Anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. Pratikul, what does that mean? Okay, yeah, so anukulyena, favorable, that's right. So the acharyas, they break this down into the elements of favorability, that we're actually trying to please Krishna, and we understand what pleases Krishna. So we understand what pleases Krishna. How do we understand that? Yeah, in Prabhupada's books, you know, through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, we understand what's pleasing to Krishna, and that's actually our intention. So every aspect of our life could be potentially, as we advance, can be imbued with devotion, so that everything we do, everything we think, everything we say is intended to please Krishna. Ihayasya harer dasye karmana karmana. Okay, I lost that senior moment. Ihayasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira nikilasvap yavasta su jiva mukta sa uchite. So one who's engaging body, mind, and words in Krishna's service is to be considered liberated. Liberated in the Vaishnava sense, you know, he's actually back to Godhead, even though he may be in this material world. Because he's fully, you know, he's fully imbibed the essence of, you know, the nature of Krishna's activities. And because if we please Krishna, then what happens? What happens if we please Krishna? Is there something that we experience? Huh? I can't hear, I'm sorry. We would have some ecstasy. Why would we have any ecstasy if we please Krishna? But that doesn't necessarily mean... Okay. Okay, so... Keep going, Madam Mohan. Okay, so why is it that I hope I'm not spending too much time on this. It's really, the clock's moving pretty quickly. So why is it that we experience ecstasy if we please Krishna. Use a mic. You got it in your hand. Don't just got to put it up to your mouth.
Okay. So I'm saying that it being our constitutional nature, and then now we've, you know, resumed doing our constitutional nature, like watering the root of the tree, kind of thing.
Yeah, but yeah. So the point is that there. This is. It's not just a static experience, you know, because we're making an endeavor to please Krishna, and there's this reciprocation. There's this reciprocation that comes through Dini Shakti, and there's a I think it's a 76 Hyderabad Bhagavad Gita class where Prabhupada compares, he says that just as the king has many servants, and the responsibility of the servants is to please the king. So, similarly, this is what devotees, their business is to please Krishna. And when Krishna is pleased, then the devotees are pleased. Because there's this reciprocation. It's really, it becomes more and more pronounced as we advance. And it's, you know, the driving force behind all of these pastimes that take place, you know, the pleasure of Krishna. So, anyway, there's our interactive section of the class. Now I've got to finish the class. Go ahead, Padamohan, one last shot.
At our stage, at Yasha Prashada, Bhagavad Prashada, when we please a spiritual master, then we know what that is.
Well, that's another part of this definition of Rupa Goswami. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnanakarmadi navitam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. What does Krishna mean? In this verse, there's not just Krishna, the little blue boy playing the flute, but it's also Krishna's devotees, his dham, his paraphernalia, anything connected with Krishna. So when we serve the devotees, we also, that's very, very even more pleasing to Krishna. Right? So important point. Thank you. So a most astonishing, tumultuous, and hair-raising battle then commenced, with Lord Krishna matched against Lord Sankarshan and Pradyumna against Kartikeya. So, you know, with these few verses, it's sometimes maybe a little difficult to grasp the intensity of the battle that's taking place. I mean, so many people are getting killed and smashed and but what's pretty remarkable is the Roma Harshanam, that this battle is so astonishing and tumultuous that it raises the bodily hairs on people that are witnessing it. You know, it's like, that also connotes that there's a lot of ecstasy going on. Usually when hairs go up on end, you know, that means there's some ecstasy. So actually quite a bit of loving exchanges in the midst of a battle here. So Lord Balaram, he fought with Kumbhanda and Kupakarna. Now, incidentally, Kumbhanda is a father of Chitraleka. You know, he's the main man in Banasura's regime. Samba with Bana's sons and Satyaki with Bana. Brahma and the other ruling demigods, along with Siddhas, Charnas, and great sages, as well as Gandharvas, Apsaras, and Yakshas, all came in their celestial airplanes to watch. So it's a big event, you know, very, very important event. And what are we trying to do? Basically, you know, this kind of connects with an email that I got yesterday from Sridevi Mataji. She wanted to know there was some new devotees, and she wanted to know if there was some kind of facility for helping them come into Krishna consciousness online. And I wrote back, well, you know, eventually we're hoping to be able to provide this. And then she was so full of utsaha that she called me and was very persistent. And she described how there were two very, very sharp persons that had been studying online with some institute that teaches one how to become a Shaivite. And but then they came here and they had such a powerful experience that they understood that a superior path was to become a Vaishnava. And so to kind of encourage that. But when you look at this pastime, here we've got, this fight between Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna. And one of the reasons for the fight, according to Sridhar Maharaj, is to make it clear and to glorify Krishna. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur make it clear that he's the supermost human being and the supermost being, personality, Krishna. So this is also very helpful for Shaivite, because they're looking for shelter. But then even Shiva Dwara, when he was getting smashed by the Vishnu Dwara, and Lord Shiva couldn't help him, what did he do? He took shelter of Krishna. So in this material world, and particularly in Kali Yuga, boy, the conditions are so heavy, the suffering is so intense, and everyone's looking for shelter, right? I mean, some people shoot heroin in their arm, thinking this will give them shelter. Some people just become absorbed in television. Some people take shelter in their families, and they have patya kalatradish, and the fallible soldiers, and thinking, and this is the only shelter that I've got. But that's temporary. So to have this elimination of the seeming highest shelter that this fight has made apparent, to Shiva Dwara, and he also, then he ends up glorifying Lord Krishna and asking him for his mercy and for his shelter. So there's something also that, this would be a good pastime for these new devotees to hear, enter into, to understand actually it's Krishna's behind, even the destructive power, this amazing, here's Lord Shiva destroys the entire universe. What a powerful personality. But then Krishna just, no big deal. But where does the power come from? It comes from Krishna. So he's actually, Krishna is actually the creator and the destroyer. He's behind it all. Another little aspect of the pastime that's relevant locally. With sharp pointed arrows discharged from his bow, Sangar, Lord Krishna drove away the various followers of Lord Shiva, Bhutas, Pramantas, Duyakas, Dakinis, Yatudanas, Vitalas, Anakyakas, Pritas, Matas, Pishachas, Kushmandas, and Brahma Rakshasas. So, not a big thing for Lord Krishna. And I'll just keep reading. Lord Shiva, wielder of the trident, shot various weapons at Lord Krishna, wielder of Sangha. But Lord Krishna was not in the least perplexed. He neutralized all these weapons with the appropriate counterweapons. And the Brahmastra, and then the wind weapon, he counteracted that with a mountain weapon, a fire weapon, with a rain weapon. So then, after bewildering Lord Shiva by making him yawn with a yawning weapon. Now, this is something that, sometimes Bhagavatam class givers, they have this powerful potency. They've discovered this yawning weapon, and they can put everyone to sleep. So hopefully I haven't done that today. I have that in my arsenal of weaponry. And now, interestingly enough, Lord Krishna proceeded to strike down Banasura's army with his sword, club, and arrows. Now, his favorite weapon is the disc, but he didn't need it. He didn't really apt for it, because Banasura was such a small timer. He only had 1,000 arms. And so he just trimmed them like a tree. That's how it's described. Anyway, I think I should stop here. And maybe there's some questions or comments. I guess not. Let's see. Maybe I should, anything else I should do, maybe just keep my big mouth shut. Any questions or comments? About the nature. Now, again, the most important verse of Bhagavad Gita, Janma Karma Chamedavyam Evam Yo Veti Tattvataha Taktva Deham Punar Janma Naiti Mam Iti Sojana. So, this is what this is all about. You know, these pastimes that really help us go back to the spiritual world. Paritranaya Sadhunam. You know, Krishna comes to deliver the devotees, and this is how he does it. He forms these pastimes to attract us, to allow us to understand his loving capacities. Okay? All right. Thank you very much. All glories to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.